Like, he passed away, and I sit with that. I'm just like, damn, we could have literally hung out with Prince in his element, and we were all just like, rather go to bed. Very tick.
When people ask you what it's like to star on a successful TV series, that's your story.
That is.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Literally with me. Today, Damon Wayans Jr. Damon Wayans is here. Super excited. He's got a new show coming out that looks so sick. And I'm kind of jealous that I'm not a participant. So I want to talk to him about that and all the other funny stuff he's done. I'm a huge New Girl fan. So anytime I get anybody from New Girl, I love that. Let's get rolling.
Big Rob, how are you, man?
It's good to see you. How are you? Where are you these days? Where am I catching up with you?
So right now I'm in New York, but I live in LA.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
What about you?
I'm here in the fabulous Sirius XM studio. I like to do the show from here because it makes me feel more professional.
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, this is a real podcast. I am here. I am in the studio. I've got my mind. I feel like Howard Stern almost.
Yeah, it's given Howard Stern feeling it.
So Damon, that's the worst Howard Stern anybody's ever done, by the way. So tell me, what was it like? I mean, my wife and kids. You're on that show. That would be the. That's the worst Howard Stern anybody's ever done. And you're
it's not terrible. I closed my eyes a little bit. I kind of heard it.
And you're welcome. You're so welcome. I'm super psyched about your new. You know, people say it's not a game show. It's a contest. It's a contestant show. How would you describe How do you describe the genre
of this show?
Yeah, exactly. Of the cage. It's because when people say, "Well, it's a game show," no, it isn't. It's not really.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a combination of the two things that I like the most about game shows. Like, you, on one hand, you have the trivia, and then on the other hand, you have the physical challenges. You know, it's kind of like, Double Dare. Remember Double Dare? It's kind of like Double Dare, but for grownups, mm-hmm. You know, who have debt. They got to pay off.
I love trivia. Trivial Pursuit is probably the only game I'm any good at. The rest of it, I suck. What? And trivia can be, I mean, that's such a broad thing. It can be, you know, super high-end smart. It can be super low-hanging fruit. I'm assuming it's sort of a mixture.
Yeah, it's a mixture. And there's three rounds in the show. So each round gets progressively more difficult.
Right.
Yeah, and so the trivia, basically, so the long and short of the show is two teams of two compete to see who can get the most stuff out of this giant cage full of, it's not a cage, it's like a giant room full of prizes. You know, you got Rolex watches, trips to Antigua, cars, limited edition Jordans. Like, we had this one pair that was worth like 13 grand.
No way.
Yeah, man. So it's really cool. There's like some actual legit prizes. Like, you can get some bank raiding the cage. But the trivia is what gives you the time in the cage. So for however many answers you get correct with the trivia, gives you the certain amount of time. So say each question right is worth 3 seconds. So if you were to answer 10 of those, you get 30 seconds in the cage before the doors close on you.
Oh, so if you get greedy, you get caught in the cage?
Yeah. What? It's really cool. It's really cool seeing how desperate people get and how much their plan A goes out of the window once they get in that cage. It's wild.
Are all of the prizes in the cage at the same time? So you have to choose, do I want the Jordans or do I want the trip? And then you have to carry it in your hands and get out, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, there are ways. Like, I've seen people, like, because sometimes there's like a kayak in there or like a, so people throw stuff in the kayak and then we'll drag that out. So you get to grab more. But if you don't put it in something, you have to take it out.
But you have to remove it. You don't just touch it or go, yeah.
You, Yeah, you have to come out with it.
I would make sure I would make sure I competed on that show with a lot of pockets.
For sure. People put it in their pockets, they put it in their underwear, which is crazy. And I've seen a lot of people just like slam right into that door because they're greedy. They have time, they go, and then they see something, they try to double back for it, and the door's closed by then. And it is hilarious.
Okay, so and once the doors close, I'm assuming that means they don't get anything and they're gone, right? That's the end of them.
Yeah, well, that's the end of that round. So there's three rounds.
Okay.
So you don't have time to catch up. But whoever gets the most in those three rounds usually wins.
Tell me about these Air Jordans.
Yeah, man. These are limited. I think Jordan 1s.
So that they are. So they're not just the original. So they were. I'm trying to remember because I had them. They were either white and red and or red. Black.
Yeah. White and red.
They're white and red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, man. That's the one thing that I was like, somebody got those and I was just like, see, I would have liked that.
You know,
because you wouldn't wear them. You just set them up like Foot Locker in your room. You just have them on the wall or like a display case that like spins and stuff.
If you were to wear them, you would be blown away at how rudimentary they are. There's like no arch support.
Yeah.
There's no nothing.
I could tell. I was just like, those look like paper mache, dude.
Yeah. Right. Did you get them when they came out? I got them like immediately, and they were hard to get then, by the way, when they came out, really hard.
Yeah. I didn't get them. I have some sneakerhead friends. I'm a bit of a sneakerhead, but nothing crazy, but they were freaking out when I told them that was one of the potential prizes.
Okay, so the sneakerhead thing. How old can one be and still be a sneakerhead without looking insane?
That, to me personally, I think that it doesn't matter what age you are to be a sneakerhead, I think. I think it doesn't matter, like because people will, no matter how old you are, will see your shoes. And then it's a conversation starter. It's kind of like, I'm tipping my hat to you. Like, mm-hmm. Damn, that dude knows, you know, he knows something. Yeah. And it keeps you hip. It keeps you young. I think it's just, I don't know, it's one of those timeless things. It's like, I always equate it to stand-up comedy. Like, no matter how old anybody is on stage or how young anybody is, it's just what's funny is funny.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's a timeless art. And I think sneakerheads are, I think it's a timeless, timeless sport as well.
Okay. Then, is there an age where you can no longer skateboard? That's another issue I have. I'm like, I see a dude skating down the street.
I think unless you're really good at a young age, I think picking it up a little later is dangerous because I used to skate when I was younger and I've never hurt myself more than when I was skating. You know, like skateboarding is a it's a lethal sport. I mean, it's so much fun. Like once you land your trick finally,
right?
But man, I done clipped my nuts, something crazy.
Yeah, and I'm not even necessarily talking about doing all the airs. I'm just like you're going down the street and there's a guy using it as a proper mode of transportation. I feel you gotta, once you're in your 30s, get a bike.
I would advise a bike. Yeah, a bike or even one of those Segways. Right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, do that. Yeah, do the Segway. You know the guy who invented Segway? Didn't he die on a Segway?
Yes, he died. He invented his own death.
Hysterical, man. I mean, terrible RIP to him, but...
Can I tell you...
Knowing that while you're dying, like, people are going to bring this up and roast you for it.
I've never eaten more shit harder than I did. I got on a Segway... And it was reverse because they reverse really easily. It was reversing and flying, and I didn't know how to stop it. So I had this moment of, do I bail now? It's going really, really fast, but it's only getting faster. I'm eventually going to wreck. It was radical. Those things, I don't get it. They're dangerous to me.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about the ones with like the handles or the ones that's just the board.
I haven't even tried the one that's just the board.
Oh, okay.
Are you kidding me? I look at that and go, those people are crazy.
Yeah, man.
Do you remember when they were announced? Do you remember, like, this? I feel like it was probably, like, maybe even as far back as, like, 2001 or 2002. It was like, this Nobel Prize winner is about to unveil a mode of transportation. And there was a whole buildup. And I'm like, oh, it's the flying cars here, finally. And yeah. And then the curtain drops and it was that rinky-dink looking. And I was like, that's it? I remember it like it was yesterday. I was like, super disappointed.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't remember the unveiling, but I know if I was preparing for it, if I was there, I would have booed. I guarantee if I was there, I'd have been like, boo.
No, boo. Where's the flying car?
Flying car, like Back to the Future promise, bro.
Or at least a flying skateboard, speaking of Back to the Future. What about that?
Yeah, we couldn't even do that. They already outlawed them. Remember when they outlawed them? Like right, like at the peak of their popularity, they're just like the airports were like, nope, because they're smart. Cause people were eating shit.
Yeah, didn't wasn't there that huge movie with Kevin James where all he did was run around a mall?
Bob Lart?
Wasn't the Segway the whole point of it?
Yes, Paul Blart Mall Cop, man. That was I remember. I saw that in the theaters, dude.
I mean, can you imagine that there once was a time where you would go to a movie theater to see Paul Blart Mall Cop?
Yeah. I was just talking to my dad about how, you know, there's no real like laugh out loud comedies anymore. Like there's going to be at least two generations that have never gone to the theater and just to belly laugh. Like I remember back in the day, you'd go like Something About Mary. You went in there and you just laughed from tip to tail.
Yep.
And like, that's never going to happen again. Or I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but it just hasn't happened in a long time. Just going there just to laugh. It was like an exercise. You'd leave, you feel your abs, you know, it was just, I don't know, man. I think it's disappointing for me to know that, you know.
Do you remember the first movie you saw in a theater that was like that where it was just explosive laughter and blew your mind? I remember mine. I'm curious to know if you remember the first time that happened to you.
I think it was Something About Mary.
That's a great
Something About Mary.
That's
or Ace Ventura, the first Ace Ventura.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Which one was yours?
This is going way away. I'm a lot older. Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein, another, but I mean I'm just a fan of all comedy. You know, I watched Kentucky Fried Movie.
Oh.
Airplane, dude, these are movies I can just watch now and still belly laugh.
You ever seen a very obscure movie? It was kind of a companion piece to Kentucky Fried Movie called The Groove Tube.
No.
See if you can find The Groove Tube. Because it was that thing of basically four mini movies under the banner of one movie, which was Kentucky Fried Movie as well. And I can just remember the one sheet. It's like a gorilla with a TV for a head. But it was definitely... can you imagine that those were movies in a movie theater?
Oh, and people like paid to go see them and they just loved them, man. I haven't seen a movie that made me laugh out loud like that in so long. Like Bridesmaids, freaking This Is the End, Step Brothers. Those kind of movies where you're just like... It's just beautiful. You just leave, you got tears in your eyes from laughing. You like quote it over and over again with your friends. All the Austin Powers, shout out you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Well, listen, you and I did one. It's not been that recently. We were both in Super Troopers 2.
Yes, we were. That was fun. And the reason why I did Super Troopers 2 was because I was such a big fan of Super Troopers 1.
Yes.
Jay, he directs a lot of television.
Yeah.
And so he and I was just like quoting the entire movie to him because he directed a bunch of Happy Endings. He directed a bunch of New Girls. And so he was like, you want to do a day? He just randomly called me. I was like, yeah, man. Flew out there, man. It was so much fun with Scott.
He was directing, I think, The Grinder. And so between takes, furiously typing away. I was like, dude, what are you doing? Because I'm writing a sequel to Super Troopers. I go, I want to be in that. And he goes, really? So he wrote me the character. And it was, I had the most fun. And there was one day on the set. This is, we're talking about Jay Chandasekhar, who is basically the lead, the directs and writes all the Super Troopers and obviously
stars,
and stars in them. Yeah. And how did it come up? He goes, oh, I know. It was a scene taking place in a house of prostitution. And one of the characters was going to come out with his dick out. Mm-hmm. That's in the script. And Jay was like, I got to the set and he was very seriously, I thought there was a problem. Like, he goes, hey, can I talk to you for a second? Hey, and he puts his arm around me and he walks me away from the set. And he goes, so the guys and I were talking about a possibility. And listen, if you're not down with it, that's totally, we really understand. But so we have this notion that maybe you might take the penis in your hand and box it. And I was like, yeah. I was like, dude, you don't need a pussy. You had me at penis in hand. This is a comedy. Like, fuck yeah, dude. Do you forget who you're talking to? It was, but I love the notion that he was like so delicate about it.
A little shy about it.
I was so shy.
And you just, I'm sure he was so relieved and excited when you're like, yeah, man.
I was like, dude, do you not know that we're making Super Troopers? This is what you signed up for. And that movie, they had like the fans paid for it. Was it right?
Yeah, which is crazy because I mean, I looked at the metrics and I was just like, how is the studio not just putting money up for this? Because this is, the first one made you guys some money. And I saw that in theaters, man. I used to see all the comedies in theaters, like even ones that I was like apprehensive about, I'd go see them anyways.
It's just, I mean, I hope it turns around.
I think it will. I think what's happening, I think what the danger was initially was the Marvel movies became funny. And so people were like, we don't need comedies anymore, really, because we're checking all the boxes and we're making all this money. But I think as people get tired of superhero movies, I think comedy is going to come back, you know, like exclusive comedies, you know, like those mid-range 15 million, maybe 30, the Rush Hours kind, you know what I mean? Those kind need to come back.
You know what else were great? Were those, I love those movies that they're comedies, but they're also super gnarly. Like, when was the last time you looked at 48 Hours with Eddie?
Yes, I saw 48 Hours, I think, like the year before the pandemic. I watched it again. And it's totally strange. You know, those are those movies where you're like, the danger's real. The bad guys are not messing around. They're not doing jokes. It's just Eddie being funny. And everybody else is like, why is this guy ridiculous?
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I remember seeing that in the theater and the opening shootout is so intense.
Crazy. I mean,
it's like a Michael Mann movie. It's like heat. Yeah. And then yet it's this Eddie Murphy groundbreaking comedic performance.
Yeah, but how do you bring that back? Like, do you have to bring those type of directors back? Because I don't even know who's equipped to ride that tone anymore.
By the way, that director, Walter Hill, not a comedy director ever.
Yeah.
I mean, not a comic sensibility to be found anywhere in his great body of work.
Mm.
Great, you know, he's a rough-hewn, old-school, man's man, Western, you know, old-school director that are not really around anymore. It's like, you would think watching it, it was some hybrid guy who got both, but he pulled it off. It's, that movie is so underrated. It's really amazing.
Yeah, really. I really love 48 Hours. There's another movie that I saw that was, I think, a buddy of mine, we were thinking of trying to remake it. What was that movie? You're not going to remember it. But basically, there's these two, it was like these two cops. They both have like little shorts on and they like, it's like an 80s movie.
Oh, yeah.
One black guy, one, I think, a white guy. You know what I'm talking about?
Were they bicycle cops?
He might have been.
It's funny because I've been wanting to do butt tight, butt short, like Laker era Kareem Abdul-Jabbar butt short cop movie. Malibu Cops, or are they just...
Don't even address it. You're just like, you guys have, you just have little shorts and like...
Yes.
I mean, that's just, it is what it is. Yeah. Running Scared, I think. Is it Running Scared?
Oh, maybe that is, that's Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines.
Yeah, I think it's Running Scared.
Okay, that movie though is in the 48, see, because after 48 Hours, they made a bunch of them and that's in that movie because that's funny-ish, yeah. But that action is playing for keeps. The difference is in those movies, like you said, people, you believe somebody could actually die and be real.
Yes. And I think they should bring that back. You know, I really like that. Midnight Run, another fire one.
Yes.
That would be a cool remake. And also another thing I was talking to my buddy about is like the Naked Guns of the world, where it's like super funny, slapstick, but the performances are dead serious. Like,
yes.
I forgot the guy's name. Leeson.
Leslie Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen was so good at that. Just playing like super serious. He would say the most ridiculous things, but he meant it. And like, that's the kind of stuff that I think they need to bring back as well. There's so much, I don't know, much stuff that I wish that.
How sick would it be to do a Naked Gun airplane? Deadly serious, at the same time, completely ridiculous in a hospital. Like, I want to do Grey's Anatomy. Well, the Children's Hospital, which is one of my favorite things ever. Children's Hospital
was funny as hell, man. It was like that, too.
Right?
It was like, yeah.
But, you know, most, it's a niche thing. That the people who know it, but not many people know it.
Yeah, I feel like they had a limited audience, you know, and there were webisodes. So they were like short.
That's right. They were webisodes. That's exactly. Yeah. So if you're listeners, the Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So funny.
How is there not a, it's the Super Troopers thing again. It's like, why has that not been a movie? I would be in it in 2 seconds as the McDreamy character.
You would literally crush in something like that.
As the doctor who's just a buffoon.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I would love that. I need to get back on that. I need to figure that one out. God, that's so funny.
Did that Rob Corddry. Rob Corddry, was he the, Rob, I think he.
Yes.
He did that, yeah. So good. David Wayne, another great director, comedic director.
Everybody in that was a stud.
Well, not everyone.
Tell me, are you a big sports person? Do you, because we're right in the middle of baseball season. The Dodgers are about, as we record this, my Dodgers are about to choke again, it looks like. Do you follow sports like I do, or are you ambivalent?
I follow a classic black sport, basketball, and then I watch highlights of everything else. I watch highlights of football. Highlights of baseball. I used to be a huge baseball Dodger fan.
Yep.
And then as I got older, I just kind of grew out of it when I realized I was never going to be a baseball player. And I kind of just floated over to basketball.
So does that mean that you thought you were going to be a basketball player?
I thought I had a better chance at it because I could dunk. And
no
I was just
way.
Like, that's
all right. Great. Okay. That's not.
He's dunking. And that's not true. It takes skill as well. And I didn't have
Duncan.
That.
Jesus.
Yeah, man. I was one of those guys you could just pass. I'd be right under the basket and just
thunk. How tall are you?
Not that tall. I was like 6'2".
Dude. Hops.
I had some hops. I had some boosties for a long time, too. I don't think I can do it anymore, but at the time.
When was the last time you tried to dunk?
Last time I grabbed rim was probably a month ago, just to see if I could do it. Yeah. But I stretched first.
And listen, and grabbing rim is not the same as dunking, as you know, right?
Not at all. Not at all. That's why I don't even know. I wouldn't even know. Because if I got hung and like hurt my back, I would be so mad at myself.
again, it kind of, there's a theme developing here. It's like, there's an age at which, you know, skateboarding is actual transportation, got to move on. Dunking, got to move. Do you remember how insane it was when Spud Webb arrived on the scene and would dunk? Do you remember how insane that was?
Yes, it was madness. Like that, I was like, that's a baby dunking. Like that is crazy.
And no one's done it since of his height. Nobody.
I just couldn't, I thought it was fake. Like that dude, was he in the Jordan documentary?
I don't think he was.
Again, there was another, like, there was like a little guy that was in it, but it wasn't him.
That was the era that I had floor seats to the Lakers. And so I got to see all of them. Dominique Wilkins, that guy was an unbelievable dunker, unbelievable acrobat.
Floor seats back then?
For all of Showtime, yeah. I was super spoiled.
I saw it all.
I mean, traveled with the team.
Just imagine. I hope they invent some type of tech to where you can go back to your own memories and like rewatch it like it's the first time you watched it. And then for a price, you could get paid to let people join you and see it through your eyes.
Oh, I love that.
That would be fire, dude.
Come on into my memory. We will go to Detroit, game 6 against the Bad Boys with Magic and the Gang, and then party with Jack Nicholson in his broom closet at halftime. Broom closet.
Yes. Getting Jack's broom closet,
Jack,
baby.
Jack had a broom closet in every arena.
He did?
Pretty much. I once had, we were at something. I want to feel like it was like the Academy Awards Governor's Ball afterwards. And he had been nominated and lost. And we were talking about it. I said, kid, I've always known when I was going to lose, and I've always known when I was going to win. And I said, what's your scene with this, with the Oscars? He goes, my only thing is I always come the day before to figure out where to park. Which made me laugh.
What a weird thing to do. I mean, it makes sense, I guess.
Right? But everybody else is out there, the valet waiting for 2 hours. Jack's already back up at Mulholland getting his freak on.
Jack has he done anything since, what was that movie he did, Departed?
Wow. He might've done something since Departed, but he's retired.
Yeah, man. I thought he was like doing the thing that actors do, which is like retiring, but that dude really went away.
I think he meant it. Yeah. Cause he stopped going to Laker games for a long time. He was back. He's been to a few of them this year, but yeah, I think he went away. I've heard there might be some health stuff, and I hope that's not true.
Oh, I hope that's not true.
Yeah, me too. Because there's nobody. When they used to cut to him on the scoreboard.
Oh yeah, it was great. And his hair got crazier and crazier throughout the throughout the quarters. It just like this man is going through it, especially when they were being terrible. I think that was like one of the reasons why he stopped going into the games, right?
Nobody should have to suffer too much Nick Van Exel.
Yes. In Nick's defense, he wasn't that.
No, he was actually really good.
Yeah, he was talented. It was just that combo. But they just didn't have enough power. They didn't have enough power, man. I feel like they got a good chance this year.
Yeah, me too. If AD can be healthy. I had Jeannie Buss on the podcast.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and she was great. She was fantastic. Did you watch Showtime, the HBO show?
No.
Oh, you?
No. The one that just got canceled. Oh my god, so good.
You have to watch it immediately. It's unbelievable.
Why did they cancel it? What was the reason behind it?
Super expensive. When you see it, you'll see. I think it was $15 million an episode.
Okay.
And you know, didn't catch on. It didn't.
Yeah.
But if you're at all interested in this, you're going to lose your mind. It's so good.
Two seasons, right? And then the fact that I heard that they are ending it on the Lakers losing to the Celtics.
That's not how you want to end it.
Yeah. At least, come on, just give us a couple of episodes where we are the victors.
It's sick. It's the greatest. It looks...
I have to see it.
It's the closest thing to living it. I mean, it really... It feels like you're in that era. It's the production design, the direction, the way you believe it's really happening. The kid who plays magic, you like
really?
That's magic. You think it's him.
I think my buddy plays Norm Nixon.
He's married to Debbie Allen.
Yes, married to Debbie Allen. Norm Nixon. His son plays him in that show.
Oh, and that's cool.
Really good too. Yeah, and I grew up with that kid too, so.
Tell me about what you're cooking up with King Batch. Love him.
So
he did the podcast as well.
So he and I met him years ago. So I used to go to this place I used to do like flipping and stuff. I used to like do like martial arts and like there's this thing called tricking, which is basically a combination of gymnastics and martial arts. It's the kind of stuff that they do the fight scenes in the Marvel movies, like where like they're doing like flip kicks and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I went there to learn how to do that because I was just obsessed with, I've always been obsessed with martial arts. And so I go there and Batch is there and we're cool with each other, like doing flips and then I don't see him for years. And then he blows up on Vine and then we wind up seeing each other again. And he's like, you don't remember me, do you? And I'm like, you're from the Vines and stuff. He's like, dude, we used to flip together. I was like, and it just was like, oh man. And so we've been buddies ever since. We do stand up together sometimes. And I came up with this idea for a potential comic book / movie to do and pitched it to him. He really liked it. And now we're actually having it made. And so that's what we're doing together is we created a graphic novel.
It's super interesting and funny because when we were talking about what he was up to, he was talking about something he was super excited about that's based on a comic. And I was like, tell me more. Tell me what he was being very circumspect. He was being very like, you know, like playing his cards close to his
chest. I mean, you know, you always have to be like that because, you know, anything can just fall through the cracks at any moment. But we're getting some real good, some really good headway right now with the whole project. We got really good illustrators and comic book writers on it right now, which is really cool. I had written a script initially because I didn't know how to write a comic book, but I wanted to write one. And so I just gave them what I had and they're just taking it and revamping it to however they want. And I think it's going to come out really, really well.
I loved you on New Girl too. I love New Girl. It's such an evergreen. You know, it's like, it's a little bit, I love those shows that just refuse to go away, nor should they, where a new generation just discovers them and reclaims them. And like, it's as relevant today as it was when it was on the air.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very interesting kind of phenomenon. I've never been a part of anything like that, where, you know, you keep getting new fans.
Right.
I do stand up all the time and like half the crowd are New Girl fans. And so now I've been doing this thing where I do kind of like a Q&A in the middle of my actual set. And it's actually really fun. And I've gotten a lot more material just like telling stories, behind the scenes stories about certain episodes. So it's like, it's not only giving them what they want, but it's actually helping me build, you know, more of my set.
I had the same experience. I do a one-man show, and if I had the balls to say it was comedy, I would, because that's really what it is. It's my version of stand-up, and I do a Q&A, and inevitably somebody asks you something insane, and you answer it, and you go, wait, that should be in the actual show.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing your one-man show? Well, two questions. How long have you been doing it? And then I heard that's one of like the hardest things to do is a one-man show.
It wouldn't be for you because it really is a natural extension of what you're already doing. It's telling stories, a narrative, And I think the people who think it's hard are people who can't or are scared to anchor a show with just them speaking and telling stories, right?
Right, right. But I mean, I think the thing that would be not daunting for me, but like what would be difficult is like having that narrative, like telling that story. Is it, you know, it's in chronological order. What stories do you keep? What stories do you leave out? You know, like how is that?
That's,
you know,
the fun, but it's no different than your set. It's no different than your set.
My set is a little more random than that. I don't have like it doesn't crescendo. I mean, comedically it does.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily like have a through line like I think a one-man show would have, right?
Well, it does have a through line. That's true. That's the fun of it. You know, I always look at it. It's like putting together an album. Like I go, do I lead with a up-tempo song? I feel like there are too many hit, like radio singles. I mean, I'm talking like I'm 70 years old and the radio still exists, but you know what I mean? Like, are there too many mid-tempo ballads? Do I open with a ballad? Do I close with a ballad? And that's sort of the way you build it.
I know. I mean, I think that's great. I think that's kind of what I do with stand-up, you know.
What's the craziest question that they've asked you? Do you remember anyone in particular?
They haven't necessarily asked me crazy questions. They've just, like, they've asked me about, you know, like, what was my favorite episode? And I would be like, that's the Prince episode.
Yeah.
And then I went and I told kind of the behind the scenes of how that came about. I don't think I can tell it here because there's some details in there that are, I don't know. I don't know if they're PC enough for.
No, come on. We tell everything. You got to tell me. I mean, I got to hear about Prince. Come on.
I mean, it's the story that I tell is not the story that most of my cast members have said, you know, how he started, doing the show, how he was on the show.
Okay.
I just thinking about this and I'm going to get people in trouble.
I understood. Cause I hear it's a very famous episode and getting him to do it was an unbelievable process from what I've heard.
Oh, getting him to do
to show up. Will he show up? When will he show up? How will he show up? I mean, he was never on. I saw Prince conservatively 10 times. And
really?
He was usually at least an hour late. At least.
Yeah, so he shot the show with us. And after the show, I think it was like 4 a.m, he was like, you want to come back to the house? We were like, for what? He's like, yeah, we're going to have a jam session. We're like, you're going to have a jam? It's 4 a.m, dude. He's like, come on, come. And we all turned him down. We were all exhausted. And I was just like, even if I were to go over there, he was saying like, we can sleep over there. And I'm just like, I don't have a change of clothes. I don't want to have to borrow Prince's clothes to go home in. You know, like going home in like some leather pants and some heels. My wife's like, why are you dressed like that? I was like, I don't want to talk about it. So we declined going. And then like 2 weeks later, he passed away. Or like, it was like some like quick, like he passed away. And I sit with that. I'm just like, damn, we could have literally hung out with Prince in his element. And we were all just like, rather go to bed. It's pretty ridiculous.
When people ask you what it's like to star on a successful TV series, that's your story.
That is the story.
You're like, I don't want to say that we work hard or we get exhausted, but Prince asked us to jam and we were too tired to do it.
We're too tired to go, man. All of us too. It was terrible.
So good. Well, again, thanks for coming on. I'm psyched for the Raid the Cage. It's October 13th. Oh, it's coming up, man. It's like, it's upon us.
Yes.
If you have any more Air Jordans, you need to call me because I'm really good at trivia and I want their shoes. And all I would do is go in and take them. So I would get out of the cage.
Yes, you would get out. It would just be, it's like, that's all I need.
I got what I came for. Goodbye. Thanks, man. This is great. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Rob. Appreciate you, man.
Well, I'm going to take my skateboard and head on off now, or maybe my Segway. At least I know I've gotten Damon's okay to continue to wear my high tops. And that's really all that matters at the end of the day, is being able to be cool and relevant, as you know. That's all I care about. Ring, ring, what's that? Ooh, it's the lowdown line.
Hello, you've reached literally in our lowdown line, where you can get the lowdown on all things about me, Rob Lowe. 323-570-4551. So have at it. Here's the beep.
Hey, Rob. My name is Dawn Rothschmidt, and I'm actually in Dayton, from Dayton, just like you. And I work for the Dayton Playhouse, and I've heard for many, many years that that is a place where you did theater when you lived here as a kid. And my question to you is that what made you love doing theater and performing, or was it something that you had before you hit the stage? We have a lot of people come into our theater for the first time to do shows. And one of the things I always think about is, are they the next famous person from Dayton, like Rob Lowe or, you know, any of the Sheens or anything like that? So that's my question. Did your experience in the community theater help move you forward into the career that you have? Thanks. We love you here. Take care. Bye.
Wow. Dawn, I cannot tell you, the Dayton Playhouse changed my life. That was where my mom and dad brought me when I was 8 years old to see Oliver. And I guess they must have had a friend who was in it. And there were kids my age on stage playing, you know, the young pickpockets, you know, in Oliver. And I had a total vision epiphany, like the kind that would be a caricature or a cliche in a movie, like with the clouds part and you're struck by lightning and you hear, oh, and harps play. I had it in the Dayton Playhouse. And I knew that that is what I wanted to do. And, you know, had all of the ignorance that, you know, that did, you know, I didn't know what the odds were. I didn't know any of that. I didn't have any of that to worry about. I just knew it's what I wanted to do. And I walked out in the lobby and there was a sign up for a children's acting workshop. And I asked my parents if I could do it. I was 8 and they let me do it. And I never looked back. I always knew it's where my life was headed. And everything I did from that point on was in service of having that career, everything. So I was blessed to know what I wanted to do with my life from that moment. And I'm glad to hear Dayton Playhouse is still going strong. It was out on 3rd Street when I was going to it. I did a bunch of shows there. Wizard of Oz. We did The Hobbit. I did not get Winthrop in The Music Man. I didn't. First big audition I wanted and didn't get it. I remember that to this day. Anyway, that was what a gift for you to reach out to me. Please give my love to everybody there. Thanks for listening. We have more cool stuff coming up next week on Literally.
You've been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe, produced by me, Nick Liao, with help from associate producer Sarah Begar. Research by Alyssa Grawl, editing by Jerron Ferguson. Engineering and mixing by Rich Garcia. Our executive producers are Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and myself for Team Coco, and Colin Anderson for Stitcher. Booking by Deirdre Dodd, music by Devin Bryant. Special thanks to Hidden City Studios. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Literally with Rob Lowe.